Aloha, Mud Babies, Pod People, and inhabitants of the planet Earth. It is I, your Tiki Leader, Steve Mudflap McGrew. We are coming live from the condo in Oklahoma City. We're sitting here in one of the finest of condos in the business. And I'm here with hippie man, John Novosad. John has the now famous one-man show called Hippie Man's Plan for America. So welcome, John, and what is the Plan for America?
Well, thank you, Steve. It's nice to be here. The Plan for America is, you know, we're going to try to get the national debt paid off in 170 years.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, and have fun along the way, man. Yeah, that's it, you know.
Well, for the people that don't know you, and because this goes everywhere, it's the internet. We got international listeners, so
sweet.
Let's give a little background on the history of Hippie Man and how he got started out of Boulder, Colorado, right?
Right. Yeah, my real name is John Novosad. I'm not one of those superheroes that, like, has a secret identity. I started doing stand-up comedy, like, man, a long time ago, 1980, I think, in Boulder, Colorado, at this club called the Blue Note, which was a music club.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Is it still around?
No, it's not. It's next to an old Chicago, what was there is next to an old Chicago pizza place, and now it's some little bar. But yeah, it was a really cool music room. They had big name acts in there, and then this guy just had a new talent night. But it was all stand-up on a Tuesday night.
Yeah, I remember that. I think I did it that with Ellen DeGeneres years ago.
Yeah, you know, and yeah, it was great. And it's funny because I took a class in stand-up comedy, and I'm not that kind of person, but it was like Boulder always has these like weird little free schools and stuff, and so there was a class in stand-up.
Continuing education.
Yeah, and so I did that, and what was funny was I didn't like the class, you know, and I dropped out. I was a stand-up comedy class dropout. But these people who taught the class gave my name to this guy, and he called me up, and he was just like, yeah, I'm doing this thing in Boulder. And I go, I'm not really a stand-up comedy. He's like, that's okay. This is like a workshop thing. You can come, you know, do whatever you want. And they had a crowd there and stuff. And the first time, man, I mean, I ate it. You know, I was supposed to do five. After like 2.5, I'm like, wow, you guys, I don't have anything else to say. But the crowd was really like, come on,
we're with you. We're Boulder.
Totally
we're behind
like
you.
Yeah.
The universe wants you to succeed.
That's right. And everything. And so I did, you know, a few more. I mean, I maybe did like a minute more. I still came off at like 3.5. But what was great was there was all these Denver guys, you know, who were there, like George McKelvey and Charlie Romero. And I just remember Charlie Romero put his arm around me and he was like, hey, man, you just got to keep coming down here and doing this. Come down every week. You live in Boulder. And I did, you know, and that's how I got started.
I remember there was some joke you used to do years ago about it was either like dropping acid, but it was not acid, but it was like soap tablets.
Oh,
Soap. What was that joke?
I used to say, and I've always had a little bit of a prop comic in me, but I had this Electrosol, they were Salvo tablets first. I did a joke about those. Those were used to be like laundry detergent tablets,
yeah,
that you would throw in your washer. And I didn't actually have one of those, but I would say, you know, those Salvo tablets, they're a bitch to get down, but the high is really worth it, you know? Because they were like, man, the size of a hockey puck almost, maybe like two-thirds the size of a hockey puck.
So your act for years has sort of been a little bit of the, hey, I got high. Hey,
there's always.
Right now, I'm tripping so bad that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There has been that. And it's funny because I was like John Novosad for years and years. And then it finally evolved into Hippie Man. And actually, that's one of the big debates in my life. You know, should I be John Novosad or Hippie Man? And every time I think, I'm going to be John Novosad, then I'm like, man. You know what? I'm Hippie Man. I got to be Hippie Man.
Yeah. So. Well, that's the same thing from my radio career. You know, like years, I worked stand-up as Steve McGrew.
Right.
And then you do radio as Mudflap. And then everybody knows you as Mudflap.
Right.
So then people go, well, what do we call you? Do we call you Steve or do we call you Mudflap? But people remember Mudflap just like they'll remember Hippie Man.
Yeah.
It's that thing you like Larry the Cable Guy. Who nobody knows Dan Whitney's real name.
Right.
It's easier to have that little hook thing and have everybody remember that. But then that locks you into, oh, you're Hippie Man.
Right. And I've had people say to me, you know, that were in the industry and weren't just, you know, comedy club customers and stuff. But both times they go, oh, I heard the name Hippie Man. And I was like, ah, but you surprise me, you know. So, I mean, that's good in a way. But it's also like I think it does turn people off. And I remember Eddie Brill said this to me years ago, man, about, he goes, you know, what happens if Hippie Man, you know, then you, he goes, Hippie Man hits, but then you have to redefine yourself as Hippie Man. And I was like, well, you know what, if Hippie Man hits.
Then I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
And for those listening, Eddie Brill books the Tonight, Letterman.
Yeah.
Which is over now.
Yeah.
What do you think of the choice for Letterman?
I think it's interesting. I mean, we were talking about this, you know, before we started the podcast, and it's like, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens, because there are people who just don't like Colbert because of the character that he plays on the Colbert Report that are conservatives, I think, that just aren't even going to watch Letterman because they think it's going to be the same thing, even though it's not.
Even if he changes it, they already don't like him because of years of making fun of conservatism.
Yeah. So, but I think, I mean, I think he's really funny, and I think the show will be well done and all that. I think it'll be fun to watch. It's going to be interesting to see. I didn't think he would do it, man. I thought he'd stay.
Well, I thought
it
was
Comedy Central.
Is it too odd or too obvious that they chose another guy? They didn't even look for a woman to in a world of all guy late night talk show hosts.
Right?
Wouldn't it have been interesting for them to choose a woman comic to do this?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, Chelsea Handler was an obvious choice. You know, whether you like her or not. I mean, she's probably the most obvious choice. I don't know who else, you know.
What I was going to ask you. Who of women comics, who would you say, that might be a good...
Yeah, I mean, Ellen has the daytime show. I don't know how she'd do it at nighttime, but she'd be one that I would consider. You know who I think would be good, too, is Kathleen Madigan, man. I mean...
Oh, yeah.
You know, but I'm trying to think of like actual talk show host type people, man. I don't know, you know? Ricky Lake.
Welcome back, Ricky Lake.
Yeah. Oprah with a late night show.
Oh, God.
Be weird.
No, not funny enough.
No.
So what do you think of Fallon?
You know what? I like him. I mean, when I first started watching whatever it was called, Late Night, you know, the one that Conan had, and then Jimmy
took over.
Yeah. You know, I was like, but I'll give him credit because I think he really, where he won me over was with all the weird, like playing beer pong with Betty White.
Yeah,
and those, you
me
know,
too.
Yeah,
that's what
you know
got and, me because I went from thinking, okay, this guy's not a comic,
right?
To oh, he's entertaining me.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter that he's not. The timing is not like a comic, or he's not doing. He's shooting hoops with a turkey, and you know he's doing. You're like, okay, I'm amused.
Yeah, that's the way I feel about it too. But you know, when you were talking about the all male club, it's interesting because when you look at now the Tonight Show and Late Night with Seth Meyers, man, it's all from that Lorne Michaels factory. He's just putting those guys in from basically Weekend Update desk to a talk
Jesus,
show.
How much money do you think he's worth?
Man.
All of his stable is getting shows. Saturday Night Live is still getting shows. Fred Armiston from you know, Saturday Night Live is the band host, which freaked me out the first time. I had to Google. I saw him. I'm like, what's going on? He's the band host, but yet he has his own show, Portlandia.
Yeah, I know.
And Lorne Michaels making money off of that. It's like, they're the industry.
They are the industry, yeah. And that's a little bit, I mean, I think that those guys are all really talented, but I also think it's a little bit disconcerting because then it's like, well...
Step outside the ring. Look for some talent in the rest of the world.
Lorne Michaels factory to get a, you know, talk show on NBC now. So, I don't know. But, yeah, I think Colbert will do a good job, but I just don't know if that was the best choice from a standpoint of the ratings.
Well, again, that goes back to what you were just saying. His character, when he comes out of character, it's, you know, can he do it? If you get stuck with Hippie Man, are you going to be able to ever come back to... You know.
To John Novishead, you know, it's like, that's really funny to think of it in terms like that. And man, how about being that successful? But you know,
because look at Pee Wee Herman.
Yeah, man.
Paul Rubens has never gone further than
like
Pee Wee Herman
did. They didn't do the Paul Rubens talk show, you know.
Look at what we were talking earlier about, Ollie G, Sacha Baron Cohen. he's back to doing Ollie G Resurrection. It's like you could not break out of your characters to for Sasha to really blow up.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. And it, I would go back. I mean, if they did Hippie Man Resurrected, like if I...
You would sell out. Wait, you're... this is a question I got to ask you, because you are a vegetarian.
I am, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a vegetarian.
Yeah. So, would you sell out and do a commercial that you actually sold, like, hey, this is Hippie Man for beef. It's what's for breakfast.
And eat the beef?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would. I mean, I would because, and, you know, here's the thing. It's like...
So you're not dedicated.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm a Boulderite, but I'm not. I'm just... I didn't drink all the Kool-Aid, I guess.
You didn't finish your little cup, did
you?
Yeah,
I didn't. But, you know, it's too many years in show business and too many years of, like, you know, opportunities come, you know, the really big and good ones, you know, are few and far between. And, I mean, sometimes you get those opportunities early and that can, you know, launch you into a whole career or whatever. But I guess the point I'm making is that if I got a national commercial where I could make $50,000 or $75,000 and have to eat a piece of meat...
You would do it.
I'm fucking doing it, man. Excuse my French. I'm
no,
sorry.
No, that's okay. It's a podcast. Yeah. We're allowed to
cuss. But yeah, I totally would do it, you know?
What about the judgment you would receive from your...
I would say, you know what? Go and travel 1,200 miles from your home for $600 flat where you have to pay your own airfare, stay in a condo that isn't as nice as this one. This really is a nice
house. This is a nice big screen TV, Wi-Fi.
But some of the places they put you up. So, you know, go travel across the country for $600. Come back home, if you're lucky, with $200 profit, you know, and then tell me that I'm selling out. And, I mean, you don't just do that one week as a comic, but you do that a lot. Right. And then you get to the point where you're making more. But still, man, I mean, you spend a lot of time for a little bit of money away from home, you know?
Well, tell me, and the listeners, tell me your best and favorite bizarre road story. What happened somewhere on the road that, you know, every comic's got one of those, like, well, then we met this guy, and we went back to his teepee, and...
Yeah.
You know, this...
I do have a story... I can't use names.
Okay,
but,
that's fine.
All right. Uh-huh. But it was a few years ago. Well, it was actually probably like 10 years ago. And I was in Tucson, Arizona. Used to be a huge baseball fan. I'm not as big a baseball fan now, but I used to go every year for spring training. And so the Rockies train there, and I'm a Colorado guy. So a Colorado Rockies pitcher comes into the club, and he just loves our show. And it's me and... a girl comic and another guy comic. And so he invites us out for this night, you know, after the show. And it was a two-show night, so they stay. His
entourage.
Yeah, are with him. And I remember now that it was right when we went to war the first time with Iraq. So whatever that year was, I can't remember.
That'd be 90, 91,
something like that. So we all go out, you know, and just... party in these bars, and you know, and then the bars close and we end up at this pitcher's house.
We can't say what pitcher this is.
No, I can't. And I don't want to say what female comic it was either, because this guy started, like, you know,
getting on it
in his house, this big rented house that he had. And I said to I was like talking to the girl comic, going, you know, when opportunity, I go, is everything okay? Is everything? And she goes, yeah, we're fine. You know, don't worry about it. But, and I mean, she was good. She was well in control. Cause I talked to her, you know, after, and then years after too. And she was like, yeah, it was a little bit weird, but it was fine.
But no charges were filed.
Yeah, I never felt, but it was really weird. And so we ended up staying up all night at this, which was actually, it was really fun. I mean, the whole thing was a great night. And I mean, the guy really, he was on the border, but I checked with her and she
was cool.
And
everything was good.
Yeah, you know, so, and as long as she was okay, I was okay.
But it was almost one of those parties that you always see about in Hollywood movies. That it just gets out of hand and it goes too far.
It was, you know, and I remember because what was funny was I didn't have a coat because we were in Tucson, Arizona, and it got fucking kind of chilly. And here I am. In this fucking baseball player house laying on the floor, you know, trying to sleep. And I used to do this big closer where I was hippie man, and I turn into hippie man wearing all the tie-dye stuff, and I had a cape. I used my cape as a blanket.
Were you still in your leotard outfit?
No,
okay.
Oh, no.
That'd be a picture.
That'd be really weird, yeah. But I did use my cape as a blanket. And then I had an aunt and uncle who lived in Tucson, and I would always go to see them. As fate would have it, I was supposed to see them the next day at like noon for lunch and this whole family thing. And I was pretty fucking hungover, but I made it. We got a ride back down because the guy had to go and work out, you know, with the Rockies and stuff. So he gave us a ride back down at like 7:30 in the morning. And the thing.
And he'd been up all night?
Yeah, yeah. That's why, like I say, I don't want to say names.
They lose games after that? Can you say?
Yeah, he didn't do that well. He came from another team and, you know, was kind of like...
What team did he come from? We can lay down clues.
No,
come on!
I don't want to do that. But and the thing that was so weird about it was that we were going to war the next day, or, you know, right around then, in Iraq, and this guy, we're driving through the desert in Tucson in this big Humvee, and he has like a little screen with, you know, the news. We're watching the war start as we're going through the desert in this guy's Humvee. It was crazy, man.
How much money was this guy making?
Man, he had to be making... He was making millions.
Because I don't even remember being, like, that kind of technology.
I know,
you know?
Yeah, back then. I know, it was weird, man. I specifically remember. I mean, I'm a hippie and a stoner guy, but I do remember.
But I remember that.
Yeah, it was crazy. So that's one of my wildest ones.
Anything ever happened in a club that you were like shocked by? Like somebody fall over and die or have a seizure like the other night?
Yeah, that's pretty wild. That happened to you, man.
Yeah.
Nothing that dramatic, but I did have a girl throw up in her hands in the front row. While I was on stage.
Okay, that's the story I'm looking for right there.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, she, you know, I guess you could say something about my act.
How am I doing?
Yeah. That was,
what'd she do? Just sit
she
there?
She was hammered. She was really... It was like, I think it was in Deadwood, South Dakota. It's some weird little casino gig where they had a theater. Not a theater, but, you know, a showroom off to the side. A separate showroom. And I saw her when they were seating her, and I was like, I can't believe they're seating her.
She's so drunk. Why?
Yeah, in the front row. And sure enough, and I was featuring for someone, I don't even remember who it was, and they bring me up, and then I'm like, hey, you know, doing my show, and I don't know, like 5 minutes in, she's like, and then, you know, there's people helping her, and it's just like, what do you...
Who helps somebody?
Her friends.
Yeah,
you know,
but if you're sitting there with vomit in your hands, do you even touch those people? You're like... Get up. Get away from me.
It was weird. And I somehow kept going. And I mean, they cleaned it up. And I just, you know, I mean, it was horrible. I wasn't getting, obviously not going to get any laughs. But you just kind of, it's like you're spinning a plate while everybody gets their shit
together. Let me clean the kill time while they get this ready for the next guy.
Yeah. So, and then there was another time. Actually, it was in Oklahoma City, man. I was working with someone. I was featuring. And it was at the old club, Jokers. And, the mic went out, and I have a really soft voice anyway, and I'm featuring. So then I'm like, you know, I'm just trying to get through, and somebody goes, we can't hear you. And so I started, you know, did the...
Getting louder.
Yeah, I got louder, but I did the old standard thing of like, oh, I'm sorry if you missed something. And then I went back to this beginning of my act, you know, that thing. But I literally just treaded water while they kept screwing around with the mic, and I would shout out what I could, and I kept it going. And then they finally got it going again when I had like 5 minutes left. And I remember the headliner that night was like, you were the hero of the show, man, because you just took a bullet you know, for me.
I had to do a show in Detroit at Chaplin's years ago where the power went out.
Wow.
And so there was no lights, no nothing. And it was weird that there was like doors that they could open and car headlights. They just shined a car headlight.
Wow. Was that
I'm pretty sure it was on Telegraph Road.
Was that the one that was like a Vegas showroom?
I think so. Yeah.
I remember that room.
Yeah.
That's funny, man.
And it was no sound, but these lights. And it was just loud.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's...
Sometimes you should just call shows, don't you think?
Yeah. Like, I mean, when
you're
driving
sound,
up a
there's
car...
There's no sound, there's no lights. You've got a car pointed in the...
It's like doing a show on Gilligan's Island or something, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you have to call the shows sometimes.
So when you're out on the road, well, I started to ask, well, it makes no sense now because you're not the typical comic. I was going to go, what's your favorite road food? Because every comic's got,
right.
But there's not really a fast food for vegetarians, is there?
No, I mean, there's Subway, I guess, you know, if you can get a veggie sandwich there. There's some places I've been where, you know, if you're on foot and all that's around is like fast food, you just end up doing some weird stuff, like, you know.
Buying something and taking the meat out of it?
Or, you know, you'll buy fries. And I'm not like, I mean, I don't.
Like you said earlier, you would eat meat if you were starving.
Yeah, I totally would. And I still, I'm not a vegan. I'm lacto-ovo. I mean, I'll
What does that mean? Wait, explain. Yeah. What is lacto-ovo?
It's like eggs and cheese. I mean, I'll eat. I used to eat yogurt. I don't really eat yogurt anymore, but I will. I'll have cheese.
Well, what is the breakdown of all of these things? So obviously you're aware of that because you know terms like lacto-ovo. There's vegetarian, vegan, whatever you just said.
Yeah, I mean, I guess...
Pesci something.
I don't even know what that is.
That's something that people that only eat fish.
Oh,
there's some kind of...
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure. But the ones that I know of are basically like lacto-ovo and vegan. You know, there's some people who say they're vegetarians, but they eat fish. I don't know what, there might be a term for that, but I don't know what that is. I don't call that a vegetarian, but I do. I'll even eat eggs, you know. I just don't eat any kind of flesh, you know. And the whole reason I'm a vegetarian is just like, I think it was in Pulp Fiction when Samuel L. Jackson's character says, you know, if your old lady's a vegetarian, that pretty much makes you a vegetarian. Because
that's all she's going to make. That's
all
that's going to
be around
the house.
The girl that I married was, you know, a vegetarian. And
look how that turned out.
Yeah, and she's probably eating meat now, and I'm still a vegetarian, but we're not married anymore. But that's how I became one. And then when we got divorced, I was like, I like it.
Well, I like the way you said, I don't eat flesh.
Right.
That sounds horrible.
Yeah,
I don't eat flesh.
Yeah, and I don't mean it like that. I'm not a militant, you know, like...
Well, I've heard it described. Somebody said, I won't eat anything that had a face.
Right. Yeah, I've heard that too. And I guess that's the same thing.
But the flesh sounds, like, worse.
It's a stronger word.
Yeah, because a little fish has a face.
Right.
And a little chicken has a face. But flesh sounds like, I will not eat flesh.
But you know what they should do is breed animals without their faces.
That's right.
Then you could eat them, you know? Just some weird...
Now you got PETA after you.
Yeah.
How could you dare say breed animals without faces?
See these animals just bumping
into... Bumping into...
Oh, man. Yeah, that's when I'll eat meat. When you show me a cow without a face, which sounds like a Leonard Cohen song or something, but... That's when I'll eat it. No, I don't. I mean,
well, then
I really
that means
think.
You've never had barbacoa.
What's that?
Barbacoa is the meat off a cow's head. That's all that it is.
Oh, it's really?
Just, yeah. You take the meat off a cow's face and kind of make it into a barbecue kind of thing.
Wow. Have you ever had it?
Yeah, it's really good.
Is it?
Yeah.
You know what? My father was actually a butcher, man. My mom and dad had a grocery store, so I'm the vegetarian son of a butcher.
So you really are like an outcast.
Kinda, I guess. Yeah.
This meat supported this family and put you through school, put
right.
a roof
and
over
then,
your head, and yeah. this is how you repay us.
Yeah, I guess that's it. You know, I'm a. What am I? I'm just a troublemaker.
Hippie man.
Yeah,
from the
I'm
go.
Hippie man.
From the...
Yeah, I mean, hippie man. You would figure he'd be at least some sort of a vegetarian, you know.
Well, what is hippie man's take on the Malaysian airline? What do you think has happened to this plane?
Well, my favorite thing about that was when Courtney Love, did you see Courtney Love said, and they posted it on Facebook, this article about Courtney Love thought she found where it was and she was studying pictures and she...
How high was she?
Yeah. But I think that those pilots, this is what I honestly think, that one of the pilot or the co-pilot decided to kill himself.
Uh-huh.
And was like, I'm taking all these people with me, and they programmed in that weird turn, and he literally flew it to, you know, think about it.
Middle
pilot,
of nowhere.
Yeah, the pilot would know the best place to go crash a plane, you know, in the deepest part of the ocean or whatever, the most remote. And I think that's what he did, was just like, fuck it, we're going here to the Indian Ocean, we'll run out of gas, and I'm really pissed at that bitch for leaving me, you know?
Oh, I thought that too. I've always thought, I don't want to get the pilot that just broke up with somebody.
Yeah,
that's the one. She'll miss me if I was dead.
Yeah.
You know, because everybody else has thought that.
So who knows?
She'd miss me.
That's my theory. But I like Courtney Love.
But let's go back to my theory. How did a plane full of people with cell phones not get something out and off? Just some kind of, hey, well, I think we're off course. Hey, should we have been there by now? That was...
That's the thing. I mean, how long of a flight was it? Do you know?
No. They flew for several hours.
But I mean, how long was it supposed to be? It was way up. They flew much longer than what the duration of the flight was supposed to be, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, somebody should have said... At some point, you can't.
They all couldn't have had AT&T service and not been able to get a signal. Come on,
that's funny.
Somebody.
Yeah, somebody. Yeah, that is weird. So did somebody overtake the plane and take all their phones? I mean,
that's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, maybe.
And I, you know, if I heard this one thing of how the pilot took it up, just shot it straight up in the air, so the oxygen level, you know, knocked everybody out.
Oh, really?
You know, and then brought it back down to it.
Oh, and so then they could do it that way.
Yeah.
With just a couple
Have you heard
people.
That theory, too? Or?
No, I haven't heard
that. Oh, there's all kind of, it's just theory. Because, like, I was talking to a guy who is a pilot, international pilot, and he goes, I don't know what happened. Because there's so much, you know, safety stuff and satellites and you know, radar and beepers that go off. And, the engines give out signals that they're working. And how do you disappear?
Well, and how can you turn off that transponder with just the flip of a switch? You know, it's like, I think...
Shouldn't there be a safeguard against that?
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy. I just question, you know, the release of information from the Malaysian government, man, because it's like one day it's this, one day it's that.
Yeah.
It made a weird left turn.
And I saw something last night that just leaked out that one of the pilots tried to make a cell phone call after the turn.
Wow.
You know, there was not a lot of information about it because they said this had just gotten out.
Right. Yeah.
The Malaysia, you know, doesn't seem too, like, I'm not saying the United States would have been much better, but I do think we'd have gotten more information quicker, you know?
Yeah, I think so. It just seems like somebody is trying to either they're inept or they're really trying to
hide
something up. Yeah. It's pretty weird, but it is amazing because, I mean, what was it, 282 people or something on that?
239, just saw that last night, 239 people.
And it just totally disappeared. And it's been a month. You're like, how does that happen?
You know who they need to call on this?
Who?
Scully and Mulder.
Oh, they do, yeah.
Get the X-Files team on this.
And they should book Courtney Love to make a special appearance.
Were you an X-Files
person? No, I watched it a little bit, but I wasn't big on it.
No.
What's your
favorite show now?
My favorite show now? Well, I actually like Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I think that's pretty funny. The Andy Samberg
comedy. I've never seen it.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. I think that's funny. Parks and Rec, I like. You know, there's some times where it gets a little bit too weird for me, but I really like Parks and Rec. I don't like the whole procedural drama, crime scene things. I've just never been into that.
NCIS or any of that kind of...
I've seen those.
CSI Miami.
The one that always kind of made me laugh was the Numbers one with the brother who was like super...
Genius.
You know, yeah.
He would find the patterns in the number.
And Northern Exposure was in it too. That one always made me laugh.
That was a great show though.
Yeah.
Northern Exposure.
Oh yeah, that was a good show, yeah. Yeah. But I guess that's it. I watch... But I'll just, on The Daily Show and Colbert. I mean, I like those.
Yeah, because you got to do the left wing leaning kind of. What are my people saying?
I'm a left winger for sure.
But you're not. You know what I mean? You say you are,
yeah.
But when we talk, it's like most people, you go, yeah, you know, they really ought to fix that. Yeah, they really ought to balance the budget. Yeah, they really ought to cut a program.
Well, and that's what Hippie Man's Plan for America really is. It's like the whole premise is that I am disappointed with all of them. And so it's like I have a better plan. And I mean, I do it in a comedic way. So it really doesn't make sense, but it's not supposed to. I'm a friggin' stand-up comic. But yeah, I'm not happy with any of them, man. I mean, I'm disappointed with the president and Congress and, you know, even the states.
Well, I'll ask you, why do you think that the left side always wants to protect, no matter what? No matter, like, they'll even lie about, and I'm not saying the other side does either, but sometimes it's so obvious that they're just trying to protect instead of going, yeah, you know, you're right, that was a pretty shitty rollout on the website.
Right.
You know what I mean? They're just...
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it, because it's become so divisive, so divided, that they don't want to give an inch, either side. And so they will, they won't acknowledge it. But yeah, how could you say that it wasn't a really bad rollout? And I mean, it's like we were talking about this week. I want Obamacare to work. And I literally, you know, it was a pain in the ass. I finally did actually save some money, I have to say, but...
But you lost your doctor.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And it's like, you know, and it was a royal pain. I spent, it was like a part-time job for a week and a half, you know, for me to do this. And I get it. Hopefully it'll get better.
Did you tell the lady that you were talking to, look, I'm one of the people that wants this to work and it's not.
Right. And so how is it going to, you know, be for someone who doesn't? But I do think, I don't know, we'll see what happens. But, yeah, I mean, hopefully, you know, 10 years from now, it'll all be just a memory and it really works well and everything else. But who knows, you know? But I can say this, just personally for myself, that I am, I don't always feel like we've got to protect people or whatever, but I don't have a problem with welfare. And I don't have a problem if there's a certain percentage of people that are cheating it. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm in favor of that, but I just look at it... I'd say it this way. It's like, okay, if we're going to put those guidelines in and try to stop, you know, and I totally think that they should be there. But I think that they should be there across the line, and that goes all the way up, you know, to the government contractors and the military and everybody else. Because it's not, there's definitely people that are bilking the system, but they're bilking the system all at a bunch of different levels. And I'm saying, let's do what we can to level the playing field, which is...
This is part of Hippie Man's plan for that, America.
It's weird. It is. Yeah, it is. But, and I mean, that's really a hard thing to do. But that's really what I think, you know, needs to be done. And I don't know. But in a weird way, I feel, in my own weird, crazy liberal way, I feel okay, a little bit better about somebody milking the welfare system than, you know, some of the other stuff that's going on.
Well, why do you think that people don't want to actually fix the system? I mean, from all the way up. But you hear most of America going, you know, hey, we can't afford this. That's not the way I would run. I couldn't run my house like this. If I'm broke, I'm broke. You know, what do you think keeps... Because, you know, people won't even vote for a change. Like, let's vote to get rid of... No, that's you're going to make kids starve? No, we're not. We're changing one program that doesn't...
I think what it is, it's... and I don't know how you can change it, but... I guess you could outlaw it. But, you know, like an ex-congressman becomes a spokesperson for some company that, you know, wants to get favors from Congress. Or they go to the media and, they, you know, they get a role. It's like they're all those people that are in Congress and, in, you know, have those jobs around that and all the way through the state houses. And
they
got
to go.
Well, I think that you just have to make it harder for them to benefit from having those positions and then using that knowledge and that those connections and stuff to basically get a weird job that you get paid to help Monsanto or whoever it is navigate through, you know, the system.
Yeah.
And so that's why they don't want to change it, because it's all that they're all making money.
Man. You were saying you think there's a way, there's something that happens when somebody gets elected president. Oh. Tell us your belief on what happens.
Yeah, and I'm not the only one who's ever said this, but I think what they do is right after the inauguration is bring him into a dark room and show him that Zapruder film of Kennedy being assassinated and go, do you want to play ball with us? And here's what, you know, you got to do.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, and if, I mean, who's going to say no, you know? I don't know. I mean, even if I wasn't, I would be like, sure, I'm playing ball.
Man. I just wanted to know if there's a true... book of secrets, national secrets that they actually have and keep. And, you know, now that you're president, we have to show you this alien thing that happened between the planet X and Eisenhower, you know.
Yeah.
We're the Masons for real. We're the...
Right. And you're going to protect this at all costs. Maybe there's the aliens that are showing them, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's aliens that shot Kennedy. That's mine. And they just made it look like it was...
The single ray gun theory, huh?
Yeah, they did a wave with a laser, something. But yeah, I don't know.
If you were president, with Hippie Man's Plan for America, mm-hmm. if you became president and they didn't show you the Zapruder film,
right.
what would be the first thing you would put into effect?
Well, the first thing I would do, I wouldn't be really putting into effect, is smoke a doob on the roof of the White House with Willie Nelson, because I always heard that story that he smoked weed on the roof of the White House.
So. When Carter was president?
So yeah. I would do that, but what would be the first... Well, I guess, man, I mean, I would really... And it's crazy to say it because everybody would try to stop me. But what I would try to do is get as many of our troops home as possible, man, and figure out a way to tell these other countries that...
You're on your own.
Yeah. And I mean, if you screw up, I guess...
We'll come back.
Yeah. But we got to, you know... And I really would. I mean, I just think... I don't know. You know, it's... In a way, we have to be the fucking cop on the block, you know? But in another way, we have to... Sometimes you don't see the cop on the block, I guess, is what I'm saying. And we got to get... That would really be the first thing I try to do.
You don't think we should be the world's big brother anymore then, huh?
I mean, it's a slippery slope. Because somewhere along the way, if...
Somebody has to be.
If it gets out of control, yeah. You know? But it's a tough place to draw the line. Because I personally don't feel like the second... Iraqi war we should have done, but that's just me.
Well, that was for oil.
Well, yeah.
We need oil. You know that plastic bottle you're drinking of right now?
Yeah, which I couldn't open earlier.
Yeah, that's made of, plastic's made out of,
yeah.
out
yeah.
of oil.
Well, and I'm not, I get it. I mean, I understand it, but I do think that we have to, you know, there has to be war, I guess.
Well, this goes back to another question I always get proposed to the liberals, because they always thought, we should never done Saddam. Like, why did we do that? Well, didn't we kind of free a country and women were they got more freedom and gays weren't killed in the street? It's like everything that liberals were for, they're against because Bush did it.
Well,
do you see what I'm saying?
But I guess I do see what you're saying. But I guess the question is, and man, I mean, this comes back to something that I've talked to, and this is really cold and callous to say, and people are going to be pissed at me, but I'll say it. It comes back to this thing, and I'm sure somebody coined the term before me, but what is an acceptable mortality rate? You know what I mean? And it's like, yeah, my heart goes out to the people in Iraq that were tortured and killed by Saddam Hussein, and something should be done. But I don't know that, you know, invading the country was something to be done. And did we really? I mean, there's still a lot of chaos over there. And the point is, I guess, that I'm trying to make is that that happens all around the world, and it's happening now. And so where do we, again, it comes back to that, you know.
Well, we needed that oil.
Well, that's it. But then that's, you know, nobody's calling it that was involved. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's weird. And then that's the other thing. It's like, is there a shadow government that's really like all this other stuff is just healthcare and all of that is just a big smokescreen? So that they can figure out how to get every nickel out of the oil and what's the next thing after that.
Well, doesn't it seem like every time there's some type of scandal or something that's going on, Obama's team finds something that's very magician-like, like, look over here.
Yeah.
Hey, equal pay. Why isn't there equal pay? Well, why can't we get an answer about Benghazi? Why isn't there equal pay?
But see,
can we get an answer about Fast and
Furious? On both sides, too, though. You know what I mean? There's that's going on both sides.
And my question with equal pay, and I know this is going to piss some people off too, but isn't a dollar in this day and age? You know, like I always hear, women make 70 cents per dollar, you know, that men make. A dollar is a dollar. And if you don't like what they're paying, don't take that job.
But then let me ask you this question, though. If it's really like two entry-level positions, you know, at the same exact job, and they're entry-level positions, should a woman make 77 cents?
But you can't make, that's the point, you can't make 77 cents. There's a dollar is a dollar.
Right.
If they're offering you a salary of $40,000, $140,000, that's what you're making. So that whenever I hear that, they're making 77 cents on the,
right,
not but, possible.
But what I'm saying is that, let's say that there's two positions, and they're both people, a man and a woman are qualified, and one pays $40,000 and for the man,
yeah.
and the woman gets $35,000, and it's the exact same job. I mean, I hear what you're saying. If the woman doesn't want to take it,
take that job. Isn't that part of what we talked about before, about running a restaurant or whatever? Where
yeah,
these are the rules. This is my company. Don't work for me if you don't like my rules. It goes back to you're forcing me to do something.
Yeah, well, I think what it really does get down to is like, because I think if you could prove that the two jobs were exactly the same, then I do think that there is some sort of weird discrimination going on there. But I don't know, obviously, the law. I'm hippie man.
I'm hippie man.
Don't know very many laws at all. But
and the ones I do know, I break.
Yeah, I know the pot laws. And they treat men and women equally. But yeah, I don't know, man. I think, though, that you do start getting into some weird kind of actually breaking the law. But I think it's also hard to prove that two positions are exactly the same.
Yeah, and I'll agree with you that I don't know the law or whatever, but so I've had it brought up that, you know, that yes, women might be paid a little less, but then there's the insurance package. Like, everything that goes with salaries is included.
Right.
You know, like, oh, but your insurance package now includes, like, this maternity thing, and there's extra, and there's the time off, and that goes, and that becomes income, but doesn't actually show up as income, where a guy gets this salary, but he doesn't get maternity, you know.
Yeah.
There's a whole balance of things that...
Right, that figure into them. Yeah.
Because I never knew that until recently, that part of your, you know, what you get paid is sort of part of your insurance. Like, we don't pay as much, but we cover more. And,
right.
You know, there's these whole packages that companies offer you now instead of just, we pay $12 an hour.
Yeah, just a flat 12 bucks and you're on your own. Yeah, I don't know. The whole insurance thing is really bizarre. It's just a very, I don't know what the answer is, you know.
Hippie man's plan. What's the plan with insurance, dude?
You know what it is? We train everybody at grocery stores to do rudimentary health tests. So then you go into the grocery store and you go see, you know, you can get your blood checked. You can get all that while you're shopping.
Yeah. Right? I kind of always had the idea that when you go through the x-ray machine at the airport,
right, they
should point out you have a spot on your lung.
Yeah,
you know, they could tie it all together and make it more. Why waste this X-ray technology? Right.
We're going to send you through again, and this time.
And this time, could you take that?
Yeah, we're going to focus on your
your hoo-ha, because yeah. I think you have a spot on your hoo-ha.
Oh, that's just
because I had the same idea once before of like I know how women love to multitask.
Mm-hmm. You
know, that so we should have like this place where you could get your gyno exam and your oil changed at the same time.
Right.
You could both be up on the rack at the same, like, while they got your jiffy pubes or something where you could...
I like it, yeah. See, well, you look pretty good, but your car needs a new...
Yeah, you're about a quart low on estrogen, and your car needs a new filter.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's a good idea, man. That's what we got to start doing, is multitasking.
Well, people always say that, but, you know, the research shows that we don't actually multitask. We actually have to stop and do another. It's not like we're not like windows where things are going
right.
at the same time. And that's why the research recently that I've read says that we don't do things well anymore. Is because you have to pick something and
right.
do it well.
And focus on that.
But if you're trying to do too many things, you kind of half-ass do everything.
I think that's what our society has become, man. Western civilization is just... We're half-assing everything and watching our phones and all the screens. I heard some mother say something about it. No television. It's no screen time now. Because, you know, everything, you can see everything on everything.
Yeah, you were complaining the other day about the, why does a three-year-old have an iPad? Why is it playing with a toy truck?
Yeah, exactly, man. I mean, there's kids, I don't even have a smartphone. There you go, but... There's kids that are like 6 years old that can maneuver, you know, through all these screens and stuff. And I guess on one level that's good, but...
I don't think people take full consideration of the whole thing, because they always go, well, it's great for their hand-eye coordination. Okay, that's one thing.
Right.
What about their creativity and their muscles and
yeah,
their
the cardiovascular,
brain? And their,
yeah,
you know, there's, you know? They always just want to... Well, it's great for their hand-eye coordination.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they can manipulate a screen with their finger.
Yeah.
You know,
ooh, like, look at that big finger.
Man, look at this kid. Yeah, I just think, and it's really has, and I hate to sound like an old guy, but I really think that it's, you know, the reason that there's so much weird ADD and all that is because we literally are looking at, you know, 40-second clips, and everything is just...
It has to be fed to you, given to you, input.
All the time.
Yeah, because I said that years ago, and I started getting annoyed with the parents that put TVs in the back seat of cars.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you distract your kid? You're just keeping them quiet by distraction, not by learning, not by, hey, sit still and learn to sit still.
Right, like learning how to interact with their siblings and
stuff. Doesn't that create an ADD type of situation that you can't sit still and you have to have input and you're teaching your child to have a problem?
Yeah.
What's Hippie Man's plan on that?
Man, we got to get rid of all the screens.
Man!
All the screens. Not even screens and pipes anymore. I don't know. I don't know what the plan is.
I'll ask you another question on that.
Right.
Cause that's funny you said that. Screens and pipes. Mm-hmm. What's the strangest thing Hippie Man has ever made a pipe out of?
Oh man, the strangest thing? Well, I've made a total pipe out of aluminum foil, which was really weird. I mean, I've used foil before, like with a toilet paper tube, you know, and you make a weird carburetor thing. But I actually made a pipe out of aluminum foil. And
like an origami kind of thing where you took foil and folded it and rolled it?
Kind of, yeah, but it looked like a bad Popeye pipe and it didn't work very well. There's a lot of blow through. I tried to make a screen and stuff. But apples, you know, everybody knows. But I've made a lot of pipes out of apples.
Yeah.
When you're on the road and you know, you don't want to pack a pipe. So.
Well, you being from Colorado, and we now have the legal weed in Colorado, and everybody is watching us. What is your take now on legal weed in Colorado? Hippie Man.
Yeah, I'm against it. No, I'm I'm in favor of it. I am. And I think it's really interesting to see, you know, what's going to happen. So far, I've been really impressed. And I think the way that they've done it is good in the sense that we had however many years that was with medicinal marijuana, and they call it a red card. You get this card and it's red, and you have to have that card to go into the dispensaries. But we had years of that to really kind of refine the system. And now there's the thing that I don't like about it is there is the two-tier system. There's the dispensaries and then there's the recreational pot shops. And I wish it would all just fall under one roof and you could somehow give discounts to the patients or whatever. But I think, you know, overall it's going really well. There's a couple things I wonder about. What happens if a Republican wins in 2016 and they really come down hard?
Yeah, because that would be horrible.
If they started saying we're going to, you know, enforce the federal laws, I mean, it could get weird. I don't think that's going to happen even if a Republican won. But the other thing that's I think is really weird and they have to get worked out is the banking. Like some of these places don't take credit cards because it's a federal offense, you know, banking-wise. So a bank is hesitant to take their money and won't issue credit cards.
So listen up, criminals.
Yeah.
All these pot shops are loaded with cash.
Man. I mean, it's like, it's a cash. Not all of them. Some of them do, you know.
Take EBD.
I don't know if they take the welfare cards, but some of them will take credit cards. I just think they need to get that stuff worked out. But
isn't it odd? It just dawned on me that what's the card called?
I'm not sure if it's EDB or what it's called. But they're like.
But it's very close to EPT, which is
the pregnancy test.
Yeah. So apparently, if you get an EPT positive, you get a card.
Maybe so. That'd be a Hippie Man's plan for America. I'd be like, these pregnant girls need some cards.
Well.
Oh man, I made myself laugh.
So what is Hippie Man's favorite? I know in this day and age, there's so many strains of pot in Colorado. Not doing it myself, I don't know. But I know that they offer all these jars of...
Right.
Of, like, oh you have a... Is this for real? Because I've heard this. Like, oh, you have a bad back? This is better for that. Oh, you have pain in your, you know, knees? This is a better for that.
Yeah, there's...
Is that for real?
It is for real. And... I mean, believe me, there's a lot of people who got cards that don't have any kind of, like somebody, I don't know who it was, I wish I'd give the comic credit, but there's some comic who goes, I've never seen so many 21-year-olds with bad backs or chronic pain. You know, there's a lot of young kids that got cards and stuff. And I mean, the whole doctor evaluation thing, I've never heard of anybody who paid the $60 or whatever it is for the doctor's evaluation that didn't come
walk
out
away with a card.
Yeah, didn't get the prescription, you know.
Well, it's like you go to California, you walk down Venice Beach. Have you been down there? There's actually like kiosk, like Charlie Brown. The doctor is in.
Yeah, and they'll just rubber stamp you through, you know, and that's pretty much what it is. But there's also, I mean, there is legitimate, like there's a, it's a, I don't even know how they do it, but they do an extract of the marijuana somehow, and it takes a lot of the THC out, but it leaves this other chemical in that's really good for anti-seizure.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some family that their young son or daughter takes this medicine, and it really drastically reduces down their seizures. So there's legitimate.
Oh, I believe that. You know, I think so, because recently there was a study done that said there's a chemical in cannabis that helps stop the growth of certain cancer cells.
Yeah, I really believe stuff like that. The strains, it's funny because they all have, you know, train wreck and all these crazy names.
What happened to the good names like Maui Wowie and Acapulco Gold? Do those even exist anymore? Do those?
I don't remember ever seeing those names. I mean, some of the names are really funny, but they're divided into two kinds. There's sativas and indicas. And supposedly the indicas are going to help you sleep, but they never have helped me sleep. It's more of a body kind of. I'm more of a sativa guy. That's like, you know, up in your head more, and it's more alert and everything. But my favorite strain right now is Blue Dream, it's called. And I like to get kind of up, and that's what it does. So
it scares me.
Does it?
No, because I have, you know, I've been clean and sober and hadn't had a drink in 26 years, and I doubt if I would ever do this, honestly, you know, but, you know, just the whole thought of the society being able to get high one day, you know, if this spreads across the country, won't we become just that society of like, hey, I got high and I can't get off the couch?
Well, there's definitely that factor. There, you know, I think it's like anything in society. There's people that can do it and function, you know, at a fairly high level, and then there's people who do it to an extreme.
Yeah, it goes back to what we were talking with the kids and the big finger. You know, it's good for their hand-eye coordination. Yeah. Well, some people it's good for, right. But maybe not everybody.
Right. Yeah, and I guess that's just, you know, part of living in a society is that there's going to be people that, you know.
And I think this goes back to what we talked about earlier, the shadow government. They want us.
Right.
They really would like to have us just stoned and happy, like the old Roman theories of give them cake and circuses, you know?
It's true.
And keep them dumb and happy.
And look at, and it goes back to the screen time, man. People get high, sit there and watch their iPad, and you can YouTube anything and go, wow, I want to see, you know, whatever it is, Bobcat Goldthwait in that cop movie where he says this, and you go, bah, 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 and all of a sudden you're high and you're watching that particular clip.
Well, you, like the other day, Hillary got that shoe thrown at her, and I Googled, who throws a shoe? Because I remember the line from Austin Powers. And just that clip came up on the internet.
It's amazing.
Ow! Who throws a shoe?
It's crazy, yeah. You know, I spent the morning looking at clips of John Lennon live and then Johnny Cash. You know, I'm a big Johnny Cash fan. And you just start going
Hippie
through.
Man is a Johnny Cash.
Total Johnny Cash.
You
Cash
like
fan.
Country music.
Yeah.
Or just Johnny
I like
Cash.
Well, no, I like the old school country, though, like Lefty Frizzell, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Hockey Tonk. What was the guy? Bill Monroe.
Yeah.
A little bit of bluegrass
I'm
country.
I'm Hockey Tonk, man.
Yeah. But I love Johnny Cash.
That's Johnny Horton, by the way.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think I was talking to our mutual friend Ben Roy the other day, and Ben was, we're talking about possibly doing a country album together.
That's
because
cool.
Ben loves country, and he goes, there's a whole new group of people that are trying to bring back country, like real country. And I thought that was kind of cool to hear that, you know, because we're so used to now this bad country. And I talk about this on the show, and my girlfriend hates it because I always end up discussing this somehow, some way.
Uh-huh.
But that's really cool to hear that there's a whole, and I think that probably goes back to the 80s when Dwight Yoakam and all those guys started playing L.A. You know, they were in the L.A. punk scene.
Right. Yeah. And it is. I mean, there are people that, you know, really like that, that go back to that.
That's the roots. That's what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be steel guitar and attitude.
Yeah,
and
man. I've always said I've said this, that somewhere I was a farmer, I'm not big into reincarnation, but I think I was a farmer.
Well, hold on a second, because you're the first person ever that wasn't the king of a country.
Yeah, I know.
Or a pharaoh or a...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I was a farmer in a previous life.
I do, because and one of my goals in show business is I want to make enough money to buy a farm in Kansas, and I wouldn't live there all the time, and I wouldn't grow anything there. But what I would do is have my friends over and have big acreage and just drink and listen to Lefty Frizzell and, party.
I never go around mirrors.
Yep. And man, that would just be so much fun. That's one of my, I want to have that kind of,
I kind of had that same years ago. I wanted to buy land and I wanted to build a fort in the center of
That'd be cool.
Like an actual Old West fort, like Fort Apache. Mm-hmm. The
big ass doors that open.
Yeah, the big doors and the pointy fences and the, what do they call it, like the turret up on the top there where you can roll up. Who's at the gate?
Yeah, man.
I just thought it'd be cool to live in like an old fort in the middle of like 10 acres. That
would be really cool.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah.
Raise the flag in the middle of every day and just kind of have this.
Yeah, man. You could even have your guests come in on horseback. And
stuff. Wouldn't that be cool?
That would be really cool.
You have live country bands every once in a while.
That's why, like, my one friend who was in a comic goes, "You're not hippie, man. You're a crass capitalist." I'm working the angles, man. But I am.
You are. You're trying to make money.
I'm trying. I want to be successful. I want to be nationally famous. You know what? I mean,
you want to be so famous that people don't see you and go, "Hey, Einstein."
Yeah, exactly. Because that's what I get now. People think I'm, or they don't think I'm Einstein, but they want to just make that comparison because I'm a weird looking guy with wild hair and a mustache. So
you look a lot like Einstein.
Yeah,
I would never say "Hey, Einstein" to you, but you kind of go, "Yeah," when people say it.
Yeah, no, I do, and I understand it, but I also, we were talking about this too. It's like I just don't get how some people just feel the need to even verbalize that. I really am from the school of like when I see two people and they're looking at me and talking about me, but they're talking to themselves, then I'm just like, well, whatever. But when someone comes up, Einstein, and they're drunk or whatever, I'm just like, I look this way, and so, But
you're not afraid to look this way. Like, I get all the time, "Hey, Vince Neil," or "Hey, Bret Michaels."
Mm-hmm.
Again, just like you said, I don't understand what people feel the need. Okay, you made the connection.
Right.
Okay, so what? I don't go, "Hey, Fatty Arbuckle."
Right.
Or, "Hey, Milk Toast."
Yeah.
Why are you so afraid to not look different?
Yeah. Or it'd be like going up to somebody who, was missing an arm and going, "Hey, what happened to your arm?" I mean, I don't mean that my look, but you know what I mean? It's just like something that is obvious.
Yeah. So why do you think they have the need to say something? Instead of just going, I remember in the past leaning over and go, "Hey, this dude looked like John Wayne."
Right.
Like, to a friend,
Yeah.
But you never go, "Hey, John Wayne."
Yeah. Yeah. And my example of the missing arm wasn't a good one to compare. Hey, missing arm guy.
Hey.
But
hey, Becker.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But I think this. I think that it's just, and again, it's me sounding like an old guy, but it's the new generation and it's the new... Everything is instantaneous, and so it's just like there's some barriers, but a lot of them are down, and people just feel the need.
No filters.
I mean,
people have no...
Yeah.
That goes back... I think a lot of people aren't taught that with freedom comes responsibility. Everybody goes, "Hey, it's my freedom of speech."
Right.
Yes, but you have the responsibility of speech. I don't think people are taught that. Like, I should be able to say whatever I want to. Yes, you have that right, but what is the... You can't yell fire in a...
Yeah, and also there's just a certain amount of,
tack. There's no real tack anymore.
Yeah, you whatever you want to call it, social mores or, just being polite and...
That's the perfect way to put it, polite. What's hippie man's plan for America to getting us back to politeness?
You have to button your lips sometimes, because, man, I'm as judgmental as anybody else. I see a beautiful woman, I'm like, wow. Or I see somebody who's obese, and I'm like, wow. But I don't go, like you said, "Hey, fatty," "Hey, Fatty Arbuckle," or "Jesus, how did you get like that?" And I'm not, on one level, you know, I'm still being judgmental, but I do think that it's polite not to go up to that person and tell them what you think, you know, unless it's a friend who says, hey,
what do you think?
Yeah.
What do you think of,
you know,
how should I wear my hair?
Yeah.
Do you ever just want to, like, oh my God, who put Einstein's head on my body? I fell asleep.
No, I mean, I see it, but I don't know. I think even if I got my hair cut, I'm still a weird-looking guy. I might not look like Einstein, but I'm just a weird-looking person. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but it's just the way that I am, you know?
You just have to accept this is what...
I've accepted it, and so I guess I'm asking all of you...
To accept me.
Yeah, and to just look at me and be judgmental and say shit to your friends, but...
Well, things have gone well for you in comedy. I mean, you've done two...
Yeah.
Craig Ferguson's.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly a third, right?
Yeah, I've submitted a set. I think I'm going to get a third. I don't have a date yet, but yeah, that's been really good. And he's just great. I mean, I met him at the Comedy Works, the club in Denver, my home club, opened for him there, and they liked me and contacted me. And I mean, I had to work to get on that show. You got to submit a set and everything, but yeah, he's just great. I see him every couple of years. He'll come through Denver, and he's always like, I want to have you back on the show.
You're like, okay, okay.
Yeah, you know, and so... That's really good. That's the beauty, too, of showbiz is that you just, you know, get to rub elbows with a lot of people. And sometimes things work out, you know, and you get an opportunity from just being a comic working.
Yeah, and which is happening now with your Hippie Man's Plan for America. We keep going back to this, but that's when you've got this one-man show now. You've done it once, and people already have gone, hey, I've heard about it. I'd like to book it.
Yeah, I've got it booked in Aspen in February of 2015 at the Aspen Laugh Festival. We're going to do it there. Wendy Curtis at the Comedy Works is going to book it on some what they call wraparound dates. So they bring in the big name acts on like Friday, Saturday, or Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And then they use local comics like me, you know, to headline like a Wednesday, Thursday, or Sunday.
Which would be the perfect time to do your one-man show there.
Yeah.
Well, actually, a three-man show,
yeah,
right?
I have a musician and, you know, a little bit of sketch in there, too. But yeah, it's a great place for me, I'm especially there at the Comedy Works, you know, and Wendy said, you know, you can workshop it a little bit. So, you know, I mean, I've got a pretty good idea of how the show's going to go, but to have that flexibility to go, okay,
I'm going
to
work it out.
Yeah, I'm going to work on this section this time. And so that's really exciting because, yeah, you know, I've never thought to myself, I want to be the guy traveling, doing this one-person show or a couple-person show in theaters and stuff. But again, it's like taking a bite of the burger. If that comes around,
that's what I got to do. Yeah, that's what I got to do.
I'll be that guy.
And the door now has opened for your show.
It
so
it has, you know, and so that's a really
run with it.
Yeah, it's a really great tangent because it's another way that motivates me as a writer to go, okay, now I'm writing sketches. And I mean, I've written sketches before, but you know, I wrote sketches for this show that we did the first time we did Hippie Man's Plan for America, and now that's given me an idea for a whole bunch of other things that I want to do. And
yeah,
it's really, yeah, it's exciting.
I think I told you this. I don't remember if I did, but I had lunch last week in Vegas with Louis Anderson and another guy, John Crist, who you know. We were all sitting around. And Louis had told me that, he goes, I think you should do a one-man show.
That's wild.
And if you put it together, I'll help you, you know, I'll back it and we'll get this thing going. But I have no idea what I would do as a one-man show. I've always thought of myself as a stand-up. This is my act. This is what I come out here for an hour and 5 minutes, right, and I make you laugh. I tell jokes. But how you form that into a one-man show, because Louis was like, well, think about what you do. Think about your persona. You're very middle America. You make everybody kind of take that. How do you – I don't know. He goes, well, you need to think about that.
Yeah, and it's...
And like you said, you stumbled into yours. You have no idea. You kind of went, oh, I guess I could do this. And you see the pieces fall into place.
Yeah, that's it, you know. And it's... For me, I had done Hippie Man's Plan for America as a segment of my act. So there's some jokes and stuff there that I did take from stand-up and put it in the show. But there's a whole... I mean, I wrote like probably 25 or 30 minutes of stuff that I've never done and be really hard to do in a club, you know. I mean, I'm working with an overhead projector, so on some of it. And I mean, I know a lot of comics who wouldn't care, but I also know comics who'd be like, what the hell is this guy bringing an overhead projector in to do a 10-minute set?
Carrot time?
Yeah, you know. So, I mean, it's hard to prepare for stuff like that. And I wrote a whole bunch of PowerPoint stuff, you know. But, yeah, as far as, like, getting back to what it is, it's weird. You just have to I did stumble onto it. And then it was like, okay, now I've got a feel. And I'm excited about that from the standpoint of I've got this core that I can work with and expand. But I think Louis's idea is a great idea, and you do just need to kind of figure out.
Well, that's what I'll do. I'll throw it out. I'll throw it out to the universe.
There you
Isn't
go.
That what you're supposed to do
that's
in Boulder?
That's what we do in Boulder
throw
all the time.
Throw it out to
man.
The universe.
Yeah.
And I'll throw it out to the listeners. If anybody, you know, has an idea, or, you know, you've seen my act, these people that have seen the act go, mm-hmm. well, here's what I think the
go.
Angle you ought to. Because a lot of people, like you said, you take a piece of your act like you did and it blows up.
Right.
What section or what attitude should I take? I'm putting that out to the podcast universe.
Man, I'm sure you're going to find out too. There'll be some good.
Somebody will come back. Well, we made it to the hour through the end of the show
all
here.
All right. Well, thanks for having me on. It was really fun.
Yeah. Now, let's tell people before we go, how do they get a hold of you?
Hippieman.com, mm-hmm. HIPPIEMAN.com. You can reach me there. And on Facebook, it's Facebook.com/hippiecomic. And man, I have a Twitter account that I don't
use. You don't use. Matter of fact, I looked up your Twitter and you haven't posted since January.
Yeah, so you should follow me. Hippie Man's plan, because it's real easy to follow me.
And you're not annoying. You will be annoying
no,
people
I'm not
with tweets.
Bugging people, but I am going to start tweeting again. I really am.
As soon as you get a smartphone.
I'm going to, yeah. And then I guess I won't be Hippie Man anymore once I have it. No, I could still be Hippie Man with a smartphone.
You get a tie-dye case for it.
Yeah, there you go. That's what I need to do.
So that's what you need to sell after your Hippie Man's plan for America.
There you go.
Tie-dye phone cases, tie-dye. Market it to the yuppies, but they want their inner, find your inner hippie.
Yep, there you go, man. All that tie-dyed, like you say, tie-dyed phone cases. What other stuff? There has to be a tie-dyed tablet.
Oh, yeah. Get on the internet, Google tie-dye promotional products, and you'll find all of that stuff.
And there's the burger again, man.
Take a bite of the burger, dude.
Take a bite of the tie-dyed burger.
All right. Well, thanks for doing the show.
Thank
I appreciate it. Yeah. And guys, you always know how to find us on the internet. Remasculate. I've got the Twitter, Steve McGrew at Twitter, Steve McGrew on Facebook. Google Mudflap and send me all your Mudflap pictures and items and anything with a Mudflap girl on it. I'm very impressed.
Oh, that's cool.
Because that's a good marketing tool. It's already out there. Mudflap things are everywhere.
See, and when you get your one person show, you could have
big giant Mudflap girl.
Or a Mudflap with like the name of the and couple.
Very cool. I like it. So, all right, guys. We'll see you next week. Hopefully. God bless America. Go listen to some Oak Ridge Boys. We bid you adieu.